and welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Davis Hovey. On this week's recap, the Kodiak Island Borough School District is offering a new incentive to retain its temporary international teachers. The district wants to sponsor these teachers to get green cards, permanent legal residency, for about $10,000 each.
And if we want them to be able to stay past that visa status, this is our only option, right? It's the only way we can stabilize.
More about that story later, but first...
Support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at KodiakHealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
Our first story this week comes from Alaska Public Media. Three cruise ships that were set to visit Seward in the last week were rerouted nearly 90 land miles north to Whittier because of ongoing construction at the Seward dock. That's according to a social media post from the Seward Chamber of Commerce. The facility is owned and operated by the Alaska Railroad and was supposed to open on May 14th. Spokesperson Megan Clemens says the opening was delayed because large underwater piles need to be removed. Clemens did not have a timeline for when the terminal would be fully operational. She says the new dock and terminal, which is part of a nearly $140 million project, is important to both the local community and Alaska's broader tourism industry.
This project has been a big focus of the Alaska Railroad since it became clear that the old dock needed to be replaced. And right now we're focused on getting this facility ready to receive ships so that can continue to serve Seward for decades to come.
The facility has a 30-year agreement with anchor tenant Royal Caribbean Group, which guarantees at least 140,000 passengers annually. Brian Stewart of Florida is on the Oviation of the Seas that will dock in Whittier instead of Seward. He says he was notified about the change the night before they set sail.
It was pretty late in the day that the plans had changed and we had to make alternate arrangements, so it was a shock. You know, it's not the end of the world. Everybody can pivot, but it was certainly a shocking way to start the trip.
Stewart still plans to visit Seward this weekend, where he's scheduled to take a wildlife cruise and go dog mushing. He says the last-minute change cost his group of 12 about $500 in added transportation expenses. Seward hosted more than 140,000 cruise passengers in 2025, about 80,000 fewer than the previous year, according to the Alaska Travel Industry Association. Whittier saw an increase of nearly 25% in passenger volume, or an additional 56,000 people. In other news, the Alaska Department of Law has voided regulations aimed at restricting the Area M commercial salmon fishery. KUCB reports the regulations were passed by the State Board of Fisheries in February and quickly challenged in a lawsuit filed by the Aleutians East Borough, the native village of Unga, and two commercial fishing groups. They argued the regulations could not be enforced because the Board of Fisheries violated state ethics laws while adopting them. The groups dropped the lawsuit on May 20th after the state revoked the new rules, with both sides agreeing to end the case. Area M has long been at the center of a fight over salmon conservation in western Alaska, where low chum and Chinook returns have led to major restrictions on subsistence fishing. The five regulations approved by board members at their February meeting would have reduced when and where commercial salmon harvesters could fish in the South Alaska Peninsula, commonly called Area M. They would also have added closures tied to Chinook salmon harvests. The borough and other plaintiffs, including the native village of Unga, argued that some of the board's votes were invalid due to undisclosed conflicts of interest and that some of the board members should not have participated in the vote. The issue has divided fishing groups across Alaska for decades. Subsistence harvesters in western Alaska, most notably native communities in the Yukon-Kuskokwim region, have raised alarm over dismal salmon returns. They say the intercept fishery in Area M has contributed to poor returns in their region and led to closures that threaten their entire way of life. Area M fishermen and local officials say the restrictions would hurt fishing communities without doing much to help salmon returns. Representative Louise Stutes of Kodiak applauded the Attorney General's decision to void the board's actions in a May 20th statement. She said, quote, "This is not an isolated incident, but instead part of an escalating pattern by the board to subvert the public process and its own regulations," end quote. In a Wednesday statement, the borough called the state's action a complete victory. In other news, the salmon runs on the Karluk and Iyakuluk rivers on the southwest side of Kodiak Island have faced strict restrictions over the past few years, and this year is no different. Subsistence fishing for Chinook in the Karlik River is closed all year, while sport fishing for kings on the Iyakuluk and Karlik Rivers is closed until July 25th. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced these closures earlier this year, citing the need to protect returning king salmon and ensure future fishing opportunities. The department has also closed the entire west side of the island to Chinook sport fishing again from May 1st to June 30th to protect the returning Karlik Chinook, which numbered less than 100 fish in both 2024 and 2025. Both Karlik and Iyakuluk Chinook have seen record low returns over the past years. Meanwhile, the Karlik sockeye have also failed to meet their escapement goal since 2024. According to this year's forecast from the department, the Karlik sockeye run will likely fail to meet its goal of 200,000 fish again this year. For commercial fishing, the department said in an announcement earlier this month that the Northwest Kodiak District and inner and outer Karlik sections of the Southwest Kodiak District are expected to be closed from June 1st to July 5th. According to the release, the inner and outer Iyakuluk sections will likely be closed until July 15th to allow for Chinook to return. If the sockeye run exceeds the upper end of its escapement goal, the release states that the outer Iyakuluk section could be opened early. Last year, fisheries near the Iyakuluk River were initially slated to be closed from June 1st to July 15th, but the outer section opened to sockeye salmon fishing from July 6th through the 10th because the sockeye run exceeded its escapement goal. This year's harvest forecast predicts that the Iyakuluk sockeye run should be very strong, with over 1 million fish returning to the river. According to a February advisory announcement from the department, Chinook salmon bag limits continued to be limited to one for sport fishing throughout the Gulf of Alaska saltwaters until September 15th. The department cited failing returns and also the low Chinook forecast for this year as reasons for the limit. No exact dates for Kodiak's first commercial salmon fishing openers of the summer have been announced yet, but the first openings typically occur sometime in early June. The Kodiak Island Borough School District is offering a new incentive to retain its temporary international teachers. This is after the Trump administration priced the district out of international recruiting last year through a massive visa fee hike. Now, as KMXT reports, the district wants to sponsor these teachers to get green cards, permanent legal residency, for about $10,000 each. Assistant Superintendent Kim Saunders says that if the school district does not pay for green cards now, then it will have to pay even more later when the international teachers' work visas expire and they cannot be immediately rehired.
And if we want them to be able to stay past that visa status, this is our only option, right? It's the only way we can stabilize.
Especially in the district's hard-to-staff rural schools, where she says eight teachers are currently on visa status. Saunders says the green card application process costs about $10,000 per person over 2 years. On April 20th, the school board unanimously approved setting aside an additional $100,000 for that cost, enough for up to 20 teachers to begin the process. The process to obtain a green card itself can take 3 years. Out of roughly 150 teachers total, district records show that it currently has 26 teachers who were international recruits with H-1B visas, which allow them to legally work and live in the U.S. for up to 6 years. School board member Duncan Fields says the district's international teachers are professionally qualified and paying for their permanent residency is cost-effective compared to recruiting, hiring, and training new teachers.
And we see from the materials presented and from long-term discussion that those costs are anywhere between $20,000 to $25,000 per new hire for this district.
A 2017 study by researchers at the University of Alaska Anchorage's Institute of Social and Economic Research found that the average cost of a teacher turning over in Alaska was a little over $20,000. But former Kodiak High School teacher John Parker told the school board on April 20th that the district could put that money toward recruiting and retaining domestic teachers instead.
It seems somewhat, however, disingenuous to pay thousands for visas and green card fees to hire a foreign teacher to teach in our school. Yet there's no consideration for an incentive for an American applicant.
Parker suggested contributing to non-visa teachers' retirement accounts or paying for schooling for advanced teaching degrees. Saunders told KMXT that the district already puts money toward those kinds of incentives, like the Grow Your Own program.
We've been paying tuition for our own educators who are on the classified side to become certified teachers for years because we are attempting to grow our own teachers. That takes upwards of 10 years.
The district's new green card incentive comes with strings attached. Saunders says the teachers must work in the district for 5 more years after their green cards are issued, maintain valid teaching certifications and endorsements, and stay in good standing with the district. If a teacher leaves the district or their contract is terminated within the 5 years, then they agree to reimburse the district for some of the costs. The money for the green cards is coming out of the school district's employee benefits fund, which still has hundreds of thousands of dollars left for this fiscal year, according to budget documents. Saunders said much of that money is still very likely to go unspent. She says she knows some eligible international teachers do not plan to stay in Kodiak long term.
I've heard 3 no's so far for different reasons, and so we'll see what happens.
Several of the district's teachers from the Philippines told KMXT they don't feel comfortable sharing their decision-making around this green card incentive. Some said it's personal. Others said they faced backlash and even racism from community members on social media. Saunders says the district is hiring some incoming Coast Guard members and spouses to help fill some of these soon-to-be vacant positions for next school year. And our final story for this week is focused on the upcoming Memorial Day holiday, reported by KUAC in Fairbanks. As Americans remember veterans this Monday, Memorial Day, some hope their friends and loved ones are not forgotten, even though they died on U.S. soil years after their service. They were victims of illnesses linked to toxic chemical exposure. Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk.
On a nippy spring morning at Birch Hill Cemetery in Fairbanks, I'm standing on Benno Cleveland's gravesite, the one he picked out himself.
Same time I purchased the one in between.
Absolutely. So this is you right here.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry I was standing on it.
No, it's all right. I hope they all do a happy dance for me.
Cleveland is in Inupiaq, one of the indigenous peoples of the Arctic. He served in the Vietnam War and received 2 Purple Hearts. Cleveland holds an eagle feather for the strength and courage to speak, he says, about the spot where he plans to spend eternity.
So this is hallowed ground. This is sacred ground.
Cleveland says he chose to be buried between his father, who served in World War II, and his friend, James Akavana, another Vietnam veteran. Cleveland and Akavana were both exposed to Agent Orange during their service. That's an herbicide the U.S. government used to remove dense tree cover during the war. Its effects on human health were not fully understood or publicly acknowledged for many years. Now it's associated with cancer, nerve damage, diabetes, and other long-term illnesses that affect hundreds of thousands of Vietnam veterans, including Cleveland.
I'm going to talk about Agent Orange, and there's an old saying that a picture is worth a thousand words.
That's a gallon-sized Ziploc bag full of his medications. His friend, Akavana, died a couple years ago, officially of COPD, though friends and family say they believe Agent Orange had a role.
There's a saying that says that I was killed in Vietnam, I just haven't died yet. And that pertains to those that have been affected with Agent Orange.
On this Memorial Day, Cleveland hopes Americans remember veterans like Akavana. Akavana's widow, Garnet Akavana, says she feels the pain of her husband's death particularly hard on Memorial Day. She remembers her late husband as a kind man with a warm sense of humor, but says things like war films and even the sound of jets overhead would take him straight back to Vietnam.
After he came back, he just got changed. He couldn't watch Pearl Harbor or anything like that because it would end up on the floor, and he said, "They're coming," and I heard those bombs.
Akavana says life has been hard without him. Between her grief, financial struggles, and trying to navigate the Veterans Affairs system, their story is hardly rare in Alaska, home to the nation's highest population of veterans per capita. Ann Masker moved to the state with her husband, Willard, after his service in Vietnam.
His favorite thing was scrambling around the Wrangell Mountains looking for doll sheep. So my assumption is the reason he went was for the peace.
Willard succumbed to Agent Orange-related vascular dementia a few years ago, though Masker says it felt like she lost him years before he died.
The kinds of things that he loved to do, he couldn't do. So he would spend literally hours in his recliner with the clicker, you know, watching TV, watching sports, watching this, watching that, and drifting off.
Masker says this time of year always brings back memories of the life she shared with her husband.
I'm sorry to be so simple, but first of all, I miss him every day. And Memorial Day will probably magnify that, but I'm so proud of him and who he was and of the many people we knew and people we lost. And Memorial Day is all about respect.
Looking back on his life and service, Benno Cleveland echoes that sentiment. He's preparing a speech for the community's annual Memorial Day ceremony to honor the service members who gave their lives for their country, either in wartime or decades after they served. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
KMXT is supported in part by the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, providing support for victims of domestic and or sexual violence. 907-486-6171.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on Spotify. Our staff put together KMXT stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. And that's it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm Davis Hovey. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in. And to all our veterans in the armed forces and active duty members, thank you for your service and happy Memorial Day.